Welcome to The Chase Down on the Leverage to Chat Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowe, with my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing wonderful. We've got a really good guest today. Part of Cleveland Twitter, and more importantly, host of Lights Camera Podcast, Jeff Lowe. Jeff, how you doing?
I was doing really well, and then I turned on the live A Christmas Story, and now I don't know how I'm doing. It's incredibly upsetting, but thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate the offer and glad to come on.
We can all agree that the Muppets Christmas Story is the best one, right?
Oh yeah,
well,
that's Christmas Carol.
Christmas Carol. Oh yeah, you're right. Sorry, I don't listen to Carter, so I just kind of heard somewhat of what he's saying. I'm like, oh well, that'll help me make a point about movies.
Jeff, you'll find that a big part of our rapport here is just waiting for the other to stop talking.
Same with us. But no, it is the best Christmas Carol, the Muppets one. That's without a doubt. I never debate that. That's always the best one.
I took my little sister when she was like six to the Jim Carrey animated one, and that one's pretty freaking scary. She was mortified, and honestly, so was I a little bit.
There are a lot of terrifying Christmas movies, actually. A lot of them are like a lot of the claymation ones, the cartoon ones, like the old Frosty the Snowman cartoon is really upsetting and creepy if you go back and watch it.
It gave me nightmares as a kid, man. I really did not like the Yeti with the claymation.
I don't really remember Frosty being messed up. I just remember we watched Rudolph recently, and that's thematically not a strong film.
No.
My favorite Rudolph thing though has to be the bad Santa scene. Jeff, the Lights Camera Podcast Twitter account just tweeted out today, actually, I think, with Billy Bob riding in the car with the kid, asking about where his sleigh is, where are the reindeer staying, how they're getting sleep. That movie is one of my favorite Christmas movies for sure.
It's my number one favorite Christmas movie. It's actually one of my top probably 5 to 10 movies, period. It's so funny. The rapport between the two of them, Thurman Merman and Willie, it's so good. It is so funny. And I laugh just as hard every time I watch it.
It's so dark, but so good. Jeff, for our listeners that don't know the podcast, because Lights, Camera, Podcast is one of my favorite podcasts right now, and that's how I knew to cater to you a little bit with the Bad Santa talk, because it got me reminiscing on just how good that movie is, and your podcast runs long, but I love it, because I just throw on stuff through the workday, so pitch your stuff, man.
Yeah, so Lights, Camera, Podcast, it's a kind of like an average Joe, like run-of-the-mill type movie podcast. We're not trying to be too snobby. You know, we're not trying to just corner ourselves in one market, though we do get some stuff now and then because we talk about Star Wars a lot. But that's going to start fading out. So it's myself, another guy, Ken Jack. You know him on Twitter as @LCPKenJack. And then the famous Twitter follow, Trill Ballins. Trill is one of our co-hosts, and we just talk movies. We talk news in the beginning of it, then we'll review a movie typically, a movie or sometimes a couple if it's a lot of bad ones, and then we'll get into it with like a segment. We'll rank movies, you know, best Christmas movies last week. We'll do best Disney movies, or we'll kind of have some fun with it. Like one of our first episodes, we created a Happy Madison Adam Sandler cinematic universe. So you know, we just kind of toss it around. And we're not trying to be snobby about movies. We try to get a really just average moviegoer take on things and – you know, break down the, you know, the good and the bad, and just because there's a lot of great movie podcasts out there, but they're just sometimes a little over the top, just a little too much to take in sometimes. And if you don't have a big movie background and you're like a casual moviegoer, sometimes that's, you know, that's just not what you want to hear about movies. You just want to discuss it with, you know, the everyday people who go see movies, you know, not the ones that get the screeners and all that stuff. So that's kind of my short elevator pitch on that.
I'm going to shortly challenge you, Mr. Like Average Joe. You went to the Star Wars premiere.
Okay, that's true. Yes.
You were sitting in front of Jon Favreau. You had better seats than Jon Favreau at the Star Wars premiere.
Yes, that is very true. So I will convert any snobbiness when the podcast is recorded. I try to convert that. Yes, that was an elitist moment for me. So I'm not sure that'll happen again, but that was pretty cool. It was a very good time there.
Can we talk about we're going to go spoilers free because I still want to really encourage anyone that hasn't seen that movie, as divisive as it somehow has become. it's just a movie that you don't want spoiled for you because so many of the biggest talking points are it's going to ruin it for you if you see it. This is I think it was J-Ram on Twitter who said that this is kind of like the Yeezus of Star Wars movies. You either love it and you're going to defend it to the death, or it's just really upset you. And like I think when you see the Rotten Tomato score, that kind of reflects on how split people are on this movie.
It's just, look, I love it. And yes, I could be considered a fanboy. I think there's different sections of Star Wars fanboys. I despise the prequels. I hate them. I don't like them that much. Rogue One didn't sour on me, but I didn't love it as much as I think some people do. I did like it, though. And I like The Force Awakens, but I did love The Last Jedi because it took the movie and it took the franchise in a direction that it needed to go, and that was something different. And they didn't just make nine of the same movies. And there are some structural issues with it, and I think there's no doubt about that. There's some pacing problems maybe, and it is a little long. It definitely is long. There's a lot of humor in it. That's been noted. I personally laughed at everything. But do I think that all the jokes were needed? Probably not.
Mm-hmm. I laughed a lot at it, too.
Yeah, and it's funny.
I'll note that, like, a lot of people have kind of, like, you know, lampooned it for being too jokey. Was it more jokey than The Force Awakens? I thought The Force Awakens had more forced humor than The Last Jedi.
The Force Awakens was, like, little nods and like throwbacks to the original series and like little jokes like that. This was more kind of like almost Marvel humor where like the plot stops in order for a joke to happen. And like I love it. And I think where you see this being divisive is people that enjoy that in their movies and people that were okay with kind of the playing a little loose with the previously established rules of the universe and that are okay with this type of humor loved it. And then people that didn't want to see those previously established rules kind of expanded and don't appreciate this kind of humor, they just it took them out of the movie a little bit.
Yeah, and I almost think that people are using the humor thing to cover up why they really don't like it. And there's been some people who told me they don't like it, and there's reasons that I don't agree completely, but I can see why. And again, it goes down to structural things. But there are people who I think don't want to admit they're just not happy that it didn't turn out to be the way they want it to be. You know, the story itself. Which, I'm grading this as a movie. Yeah, I'm a huge, huge fan. I love Star Wars. But, you know, I don't dislike Gone Girl, spoiler, because in the end they end up together again and, you know, he doesn't get revenge. It makes me unhappy. A movie that came out this year, which I think is the second best of the year, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. It has a very ambiguous ending and is tough to take in. But, you know, I'm not going to dislike the movie because it didn't end the way I wanted to. But I think we have such a personal connection with a thing like Star Wars. If you're a fan, or if it doesn't go the way you want it, you're so offended.
Right.
And I think it's a tough thing for Lucasfilm to have to juggle now is because there's no way they could have changed it, but they had 2 years of constant speculation. And I mean, yeah, it's great for them that it hyped it up, but it obviously hurt them a little bit because when things don't totally go the way everyone thinks they will and how they want it to, people revolt and they say it's terrible. But like, are they hating it because of the movie and like their structural issues? Are they hating it because, you know, again, no spoilers, blank character turned out to be this, you know, or blank character had this story arc. So I've been trying to weed it out because I've had people tweet at me like, oh, it sucks, it's bad. I'm like, okay, that's fine if you think that, but tell me why. And then I had one person who explained it and was dead wrong in everything they said in terms of like plot holes, and he was like, oh, okay, maybe you're right. And again, not everyone's right or wrong. I always say this about the podcast, we're never right, we're never wrong. You know, it's a movie, it's an opinion. So unless you don't like La La Land, then you're just wrong. That's my like one hardcore opinion. So I guess that's my thing. I don't know, like, you know, some of them are justifiable, the reasons why people are disliking it, but other things I'm just like, why are you – like, get over it, man. Like, it's a movie. Like, I know you have a personal connection to it. It just didn't go the way you wanted it to, but that's why movies are like that. It's a story, you know? Things can end the way you want it.
I agree in a lot of ways, and I think that what I've come – one of my very favorite fellow Star Wars fans just hated the movie – in a way that just – I was really genuinely sad about it that he hated it so much because we were both so excited collectively. And I think what a lot of it comes down to is I think people are – I think you're right in a lot of ways, Jeff, that there aren't necessarily engaging with the real reason they didn't like it. I think it either comes down to the core story they were pushing resonated with you or it didn't. Because yeah. I think anyone who went and saw it had a couple gripes and saw a few holes in the plot. But like ultimately, like just like I think we all were with The Force Awakens that had some holes in it. It's like we just loved the core of it. And you're willing to when you love the core of it, you're willing to forgive stuff on the periphery. But people are kind of like pointing to the stuff on the periphery when I just want to say, is that why you didn't like it? Or is it just the core? Mm-hmm. Because I adored it. I thought it was amazing. I think I'm definitely more – I think all three of us really loved the movie. And I think it took a lot of chances and just dispelled with a couple things that I was worried that they were going to take it in a direction that I thought was just kind of boring. Mm-hmm. I loved it. And I'm glad that you two loved it as much as you did because after like arguing with my friend for like 3 hours, I was really depressed.
It's tough because there are some things that I've read that I'm just like, oh, that's a bummer. And there are some things that are legitimate that even have gripes with the story where I'm like, okay, I can see that. But yeah, it's disappointing. None of my close friends have hated it. And we'll mm-hmm. see. I'm like the one who I'm curious who's going to like it is my dad. Was we're going on Wednesday of this week. When I'm back home, my family, and we're going to see an IMAX. I'm curious about what he's going to think about it. Because the rest of my family, my mom, my sister, and my grandma, they're going to love Porgs and all that stuff. Well, I'm curious what my dad thinks. It's like a lifelong, not a diehard like me, but a life like he got me into it. So
Hashtag Team Porgs. I'm very Team Porgs.
Very Team Porg. Yeah, I love Porg. And they weren't in the movie too much. And I had somebody tell me, like, oh, the Porgs were nonsense. I'm like, you know, that's a preconceived notion you had going into it because they really weren't. And I know there are some people who I know who don't like the movie who were even like, Porgs are fine. Didn't ruin anything for me.
Well, the funny thing is, like, the Porgs and, like, the other comedy that were in it, typically, like, in the original trilogy, that was, like, C-3PO's role. And, like, that was, like, comedy for the time. And then this is kind of just... Like, it's a bit of an update. Like, to me, I love it. Empire is untouchable, in my opinion, like, just in terms of being, like, a perfect movie. But in terms of, like, my favorite, I think right now I'm going to need to see it more. But I think this one is it. Just because I grew up with the original trilogy. I loved it. And it was just so nice to see it go in a new direction and be something unique, take risks. Even if it doesn't all land, I just like that it was something I hadn't seen before.
Yeah, I mean, the Return of the Jedi, little teddy bears beat the Empire. I mean, so, you know, like, do we want to, like, start going, you know, blow for blow on all this stuff? And I love Return of the Jedi. I think Return of the Jedi gets a bad rap because I think Return of the Jedi has some really smart moments in it, especially with Luke. But, you know, it's like, look, we can nitpick. And, yeah, like, I, as someone who loved it, and I initially gave it a 95 out of 100, and I dropped it to a 93, still liked it more than Force Awakens, You know, I loved it, but I admit there's a few flaws and some of the humor could be overblown. But again, yeah,
it has nothing on the Return of the Jedi, because the Return of the Jedi is everything I've wanted it to be. Jedi Osmond has been awesome for the Cavs. And this is that's what we call a pro transition right there.
That was great.
I'm botching it by pointing it out, but I'm just so happy with myself right now.
You could actually tell in the way you jumped on it that you were a little too amped. It's like when you're hanging out with your friends and everyone's like making jokes and you just like going a little too hard on your punchline because you were so proud of yourself.
It's like when you come off the bench after like sitting for the entire game and your first shot goes like clean over the backboard.
The Carlton.
I am the Carlton of this podcast.
The only time I get to be Will. Anyway. Let's talk Jedi. I do think we should move on to Cavs talk because
probably makes sense.
Once again, definitely please subscribe to Lights Camera Pod because are we the first pod you've gotten to talk about your reactions?
Yes, this actually is because we didn't release our mini podcast and yeah, we're gonna have our full reactions with another guy from another podcast called The Weekly Planet, who kind of inspired ours, James, Mr. Sunday Movies on YouTube. He's gonna come on from Australia, so we're going down under for that.
Oh, wow.
he's going to come on next week. But yeah, this is the first time I've actually recorded anything. And I've really not said much on Twitter. Again, I'll move away from this for a second. But no, you guys get the first exclusive take from me, really, for the most part.
This is big.
We'll take it as an honor, even though it's just basic, like, logistics. But we should move on to the Cavs, and I think Jetty is a good place to start. All of a sudden, he's just a guy in the rotation. He played like 23 minutes on Saturday against the Jazz, chipped in 10 points, and what had Cavs Twitter, including myself, melting down. Like, I was getting ready. I just tweeted. I was going to tweet just like, double-digit season, and then I realized that we would be so mean to any other fan base. If we were celebrating a rookie scoring 10 points 28 games into the season. But he's been playing really well.
Yeah, he definitely deserves a spot in the rotation. Like, he knows exactly what he should and shouldn't be doing. Like, any attempts that he has, it's like, okay, that's a shot I'm fine with him taking. There's none of that, like, Iman Shumpert. All of a sudden, I haven't really touched the ball in a while, so when I do, I'm going to isolate. There's nothing like that with him. He's just a smart player, and you can tell he's adjusting to the NBA game. Jeff, what have some of your thoughts been on Jetty so far this season?
Well, besides adjusting to the name, because I said the name wrong for so long, I think, like most of us, it's encouraging to see a young player progress, like, throughout a season with the Cavs, because it's something we just I can't, like, I'm trying to, besides Kyrie, but, like, does Kyrie and Tristan Thompson really count? Like, I mean, they're going to come in right away because of, like, where they were drafted. Same with Dion. But, like, seeing a guy who was, you know, not one of the top draft picks, somebody who, you know, we've talked about for a while, somebody who can, like, develop and become part of the rotation, especially on, an older team, it's encouraging, you know? Not like players, I mean, I'm sure Christian Ayanga is a terrible example, but a guy that we always talked about because we watched his crazy dunk videos. And we talked about Jetty for so long, and just watched, like, him overseas, and now to see him, like, progress, it's fun to watch and encouraging. And I didn't get to catch the game too much tonight against the Wizards, but I mean, I see, again, decent stat line. And it's like, you know, I don't know how it's going to shake out. Like, I don't know how the rotation will shake out when IT comes back, and, you know, if they do make a trade, or when they do get Paul George. Does that fit in the narrative better?
Yeah.
So when they do trade soon for Paul George.
Yeah, cater to the pod. Know who your audience is right now. When they get Paul George.
Just are beaming on our ends.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Thunder losing to the Knicks without Porzingis is just that. Oh. That warmed my heart.
Carter's degenerate gambler update. I had bet on the Knicks to win that game before Porzingis was ruled out because I forgot he might not play. And, like, when he got ruled out, I was like, my. I blew 30 bucks. I'm an idiot. And then, like, I check at the end of the third quarter because I wasn't even watching because I was in a bad mood about my bad bet. And they were up 13. And I was just like, I screamed at work. I was so pumped.
You're all over those. You had one recently when, like, the Warriors didn't play their entire team against the Kings.
Yes.
And I, like, that was tweeted about it.
It was my biggest hit I've ever had.
Dude, I like, tripped over stuff to get to my laptop to, like, to put some stuff down on that game because I was like, but that's perfect. And I just got it in time because I went to make another one and put it in a parlay and it locked. So
I didn't realize you were a degenerate.
I'm not. I'm not as much as, like, my friends, but I will, like, Sunday, NBA, I'll do NBA and NFL kind of combined. But when I saw that, I didn't even know what day it was. I was like, that makes too much sense. Like, I lose so much. Like, that's a win, right? And
that's a winner.
Fair enough, it was.
Yeah, I think I'm really still disappointed by the NBA's new policy about, like, resting players, because I think LeBron, like, putting in bets, once I get the push notification from Cavs beat writers that LeBron was resting before the line moved, helped me break even the last 2 years.
But I don't get that now anymore. Now the bench is actually playing well, and they're playing well with LeBron off the floor. Like, I feel like it's actually possible for this team to win a game without LeBron, although they did just burn through, like, the bulk of their easy games in their schedule.
That's true.
But this win against the Wizards, I don't know if you guys agree. Jeff, you already said you didn't watch much of it, and you missed a good one, because I think this is one of the Cavs' best wins of the season, just because second night of a back-to-back, Washington's a much better team than their record, just because they've had John Wall out for a while. And they were struggling early. Like, Kevin Love and LeBron couldn't hit a shot to save their life. And it was, like, just everybody stepping up. Love kind of bounced back in the second half. LeBron got a triple-double, just making great decisions everywhere. Hustle plays by J.R. Smith, Korver, Jeff Green, Osman played well. It was just a great team effort. And to see the bench play well without Dwayne Wade being there, it really goes to show just how much better the ball movement has been this season, how much they're trusting each other, and just the job Tyronn Lue has done with their schemes.
Yeah, it was. I watched right around when JR made that hustle play at the end.
Oh, and then they had a couple. Was such a good moment.
Amazing. The way the team reacted. And that rolls into kind of my thoughts. Just, they're just more fun to watch this year, which is insanity. And I just, again, they had like a couple offensive rebounds there at the end. This was a win that instilled some confidence, because I kind of forgot that the schedule was so easy, because I was trying to like shed the negativity for once, because I was going to go into this year and not watch as like many full games, just because I'd be like, you know what, I'll follow on Twitter, it's almost more fun there, I'll watch some highlights after. But like, finally, they're all of a sudden fun to watch. Like, when LeBron came back, I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch every game. I'm going to rewatch replays. And then they're the most depressing regular season team of all time. And even last year, when you knew why they were like, you're like, okay, whatever, they're just going to make the finals anyway. It still just sucked. But now this year, like, it's an enjoyment. And just, it's so strange that this is how it happened, like, after you trade Kyrie Irving. But again, yeah, you're right. It's great to see them beat a team that you can consider good in the East.
Hey, Chase Down listeners, listen up. The Cavaliers may not care about the regular season, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't. If you love fantasy basketball, then you need to try my new favorite app, Draft. It's daily fantasy basketball, but it's not like the other guys. On Draft, you play in real life snake drafts with other people, just like in your season long league. Here's how it works. It's a draft that lasts for just one night and there's no management. Just set it and forget it. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. Draft even takes care of last-minute injuries for you. Drafts start every couple minutes, so you can join one right now. And the best part? You can play for cold, hard cash. Drafts start at just $1, so you don't have to be Dan Gilbert if you want to buy your way in. There's no salary caps, and you can play in a real live snake draft, just like the one you play in with your friends in a season-long league. Come and join me on Draft today. Download the app at any time. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes. Or you can play right from your computer on draft.com. Whatever you want. For a limited time only, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit. But if you want that, you're going to have to use our promo code, THECHASEDOWN. That's THECHASEDOWN, one word. That's right, you can play a real money game for free just for using our promo code, THECHASEDOWN, one word, on your first deposit on Draft.
This is crazy. These are the Cleveland Cavaliers who lose to the Nets and lose to the worst teams in the league and like don't and like no show games against the Blazers to get their coach fired. Like, this is what they do. And like, all of a sudden they really seem to just show up in like a notable way. And I think a lot of people are probably going to, you know, if you're feeling petty, you might point and say, oh, see what happens when Kyrie's not here. They can play without LeBron, like as some like evidence of proof that like Kyrie's not good, which of course is kind of ridiculous. But in a lot of ways, like, this team is better built for the regular season at the least. Like, they don't have to be superhuman to win every night because they don't try on defense and the ball doesn't move. The ball does move a lot better this year, just across the board. They're scoring more off cuts. They're scoring more off dribble handoffs. And I think that goes a really long way in helping maintain consistent flow. And then you have someone like Jeff Green, who's been a solid secondary playmaker. You've got Korver fully I think Korver fully being built into the offense is something we don't appreciate enough.
My God, he's been so good. Like,
it's not, insane.
Like, not even just the shots he hits, because those are incredible. Like, the net almost never moves when he shoots. It's absolutely crazy. But the attention he draws when he moves off ball, or just his positioning, like, he knows where he needs to be on both ends of the floor all the time. Like, he's still someone that if he's one-on-one in space with any NBA wing player, they're probably going to get the better of him. But he's got solid positioning, he's got solid hands, he makes hustle plays, he does so many little things that end up like really contributing to his total impact more than just his spectacular shooting.
Yeah, one of Tristan's dunks tonight came on play where it was Channing on the floor, or it was Tristan on the floor this time. Korver was sitting in the corner, and Tristan screens for Korver as he flares up towards the left wing, and normally gets a wide open three. They overcommitted. Tristan just rolled to the rim, got a wide open dunk. Like, that's not an assist for Korver, but it's help. That's all because Korver exists.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
So, like, I think last year, even when Korver was good, he wasn't this good. And look, like, I never really paid a close attention to Korver. Like, I wouldn't watch like Hawks games or anything. My least favorite team in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know him because he's Korver. You know him through highlights. You know, you'd watch like, oh, Korver heats up YouTube video. And when I watched him last year, I was like, maybe I just don't know Korver as well, because I just usually watch the good stuff. But now, like, when I see him this year, you're like, okay, this is the Kyle Korver. Like, you know, I heard about, like, full game tape and, like, what he can really do beyond just, like, those YouTube clips or things that you would see on Twitter when he would, like, go off. You're right, it's incredible. And that's always been my one big gripe with these Cavs teams, is that you always feel like you have these teams happen in, like, chunks. And that would even be the case if they get Paul George. And it's going to happen no matter what with IT, because he's going to come back with like half the season to go, is you always have to implement players with this team. So it's really nice when you see a guy who's been fully implemented like Kyle Korver, especially after like JR implemented really well when he got traded, but then you saw the next year was a totally different story. So it's like really nice to see Korver in that sense, like now he's a part of the team. And I will say, if that credit to Dwayne Wade, because he's fit in perfectly, which, I mean, that's just who he is. He's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the best of all time. So that's, I think, it's just a testament to Dwayne Wade as a player. But yeah, seeing Korver integrated well and like flowing with the team, it's unbelievable to watch. Like the stuff that he hits, I don't understand. It's unreal.
Like I just think about how hard it is. Like every shot he takes is a high degree of difficulty shot.
Yeah.
Like that's what's nuts about it, is like I think there have been a lot of players who have been paid after playing with LeBron James, and they see their 3-point numbers kind of dwindle because, oh yeah, they don't play with the guy who just gets them wide open threes all the time anymore. This is not what that is.
No.
Like, Korver takes exclusively really hard shots. Like, just because he's catch and shooting does not mean they're easy. He is going at a dead sprint, and because he's getting older, he can't do anything but dead sprint to get open. And like, and then have all of his body momentum going away from the hoop and to the right, and he can just square, stop, and like take a perfectly balanced three that, as Justin noted, doesn't even move the net. It's bonkers. I did want to note something with Wade that I thought was interesting, especially last game where he missed his first six shots. He ended up heating up a little bit in the fourth quarter. I think he went 3-for-3 in the fourth, but it was just really ugly. I think nights like that are where we're really going to start appreciating Isaiah Thomas when he comes back.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Wade's just not going to be able to have it every night like that. And that's not a problem. Ultimately, like in the playoffs, it's going to be a lot easier where you have a little bit more time off and dedicated game plans. But like there are going to be nights where he just doesn't have lift. I mean, think about the layup he missed where Jetty had that really nice drop pass in the mid post after getting his own rebound, and then he just biffed the layup because he just didn't have his legs under him. Like that's something that is not going to be a problem once you have Thomas back. It really insulates you against those tough nights. And I mean, we just had the news break before the pod came on that Thomas is targeting January 1st, even though it pretty much seems like he could play now if he wanted to. Do you guys agree with kind of keeping him on the shelf until after Christmas, and not throwing him to the Wolves against the Warriors with like one game under his belt.
I think with both Steph Curry sitting out, it's kind of fair. Like, it's a fair trade for Isaiah to be out at the same time, right?
Sure.
I'm fine with it. I get the cautious approach. Boston made Isaiah play through injuries, and it probably had some long-term damage, and it makes sense that he'd be hesitant to not go before he's fully comfortable. And plus, he does have his free agency coming up this summer. And Isaiah Thomas isn't a guy that was picked high and had a big salary throughout his whole career. This is his first major contract that he's going for. And it makes sense that he wouldn't want to go out until he knows he can play at the level he played last season. Plus, with a delayed approach, all of a sudden he has more time to practice with the Cavs and to get comfortable and know what they're running. So when he steps out on the court, he doesn't look out of place or be someone that stops the flow of the offense like Derrick Rose was.
Yeah, and I think the hot start compared to the last few years has lended perfectly to that too, because say they were struggling still after that 5-7 start, and say they're around 500, then you know what, maybe it is time to force him back. But I think it's so perfect now that they haven't really stressed, you know, too much on themselves, and it allows them to have IT slowly come back. I mean, yeah, I'd love to see him on Christmas Day, but I'm over Christmas Day at this point. We've had a great game last year, you know, they won the game. So, like, it doesn't bother me as much, I guess. I'm still going to enjoy watching them play. But, you know, get him back slow, integrate him in. It's like I said before, you know, the Cavs are always integrating players, I feel like. Big players, too, not just, like, little players here and there. So just do it slow. You're right. And I think for him as a player too, don't go out there and ruin your career if you're just not ready to go. There's just no point. I'm excited to see him play. And you know, if it takes, you know, if he has to take a couple games off in the first few weeks too, then so be it. I think just integrate him as best you can and make sure it's seamless, because I mean, I think you're right. I think come like playoff time and everything after this, you know, this team goes through the regular season, he's going to be completely needed.
I'm actually, something I was thinking about with Thomas recently, and this is like kind of niche and kind of like, I don't know if it matters at all, but I'm kind of excited to see the type of player Isaiah is play on this Cavs team. Like, so obviously he has like a similar statistical profile to Kyrie in terms of good shooter, pretty good finisher, you know, really tight handle, but they do play very differently. I think if you just look stylistically, like Kyrie is not like a great, like, super quick athlete. Like, Kyrie generated his space a lot of the times off of the strength of his handle and the strength of his jumper, kind of like how Steph does in a lot of ways. Whereas Isaiah is, like, it'll be really fun to see someone with that insane first step like Isaiah does play within the context of the Cavaliers. Like, we haven't really seen anything like that
right. On
the Cavs.
And God, I hope he still gets free throw calls the way he did in Boston, because it sometimes changes a little bit when you're not the number one option. And that's funny to say, because it's not like LeBron gets a lot of calls just because of his size and the way he's officiated. But for a little guy, free throws are just such an important part of him being efficient, and the league seems to reward little guys when they get contact, and he knows how to draw contact. But yeah, as Carter said, he's just so dynamic with his first step. He's a smart player. It's how he's been able to make up for a lot of what he lacks physically. So it will be exciting to see how he's doing on this team, and I really do think it's going to be a seamless, just pretty much seamless transition, because the way the Cavs are playing this year with their improved ball movement, it seems like they can just kind of cycle guys in. In the past, it was so isolation heavy. They had to figure out ways to get guys going. Like, you saw it was a process to get Kyle Korver going and figure out what type of looks he likes. Now, just because of the way they play, you have guys that really excel cutting off ball, like Kevin Love, Jeff Green, Chetty Osmond, Dwayne Wade, and they just cycle guys in. Like, if you're moving, you're going to get rewarded for that movement. And guys like Korver, like, he just finds those open spots and he gets shots. It's not like it's a set plays. It's just the team is playing with their head up this year. Guys are moving. They're more active. And you just don't see that stagnant basketball that you saw in past seasons.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit it dead on, because I think if he was coming into the same offense they ran last year, especially coming from Boston where it's a completely different world like that, I could see a problem. But no, I think you're right. I think just for him, I think it's just getting back to, you know, basketball speed, really. You know, if they keep playing the way they're playing and run the offense as they do, it opens up so much. I'm excited to see him play. I mean, I'm really amped up. I know I've had some people tweeting me about, you know, the trade and the Nets pick and all that, and I still think, I mean, shit, I just think Isaiah's just totally overlooked still, which sounds crazy, but like, if he starts getting going and he plays even like two thirds of what he did last year, can do it with this Cavs team with LeBron, it's going to be a complete slam dunk. You know what happens after this year, what happens, but for this year right now with the way they're playing, it's exciting,
especially with Paul George there.
Yeah, I'm curious how that's, you know, how that's gonna integrate. Yeah.
It's getting like so much louder that, you know, what's freaking me out about the Paul George thing is that I'm seeing like other outlets talking about it, like, not even like in the sense like they think it's going to happen, just like I think early this season when Justin and I were like just like furiously exchanging G-chats over how it could happen, it was like we knew we were being a little ridiculous.
I like being ridiculous. Like, it's
like fun.
It's performative and it's a good way to have a laugh. And then you're like, well, it would be great if this really happened, but you know, I'm fine with the way things are. But yeah, like, I heard Ramona Shelburne talking about it, and like, there's so many other people that are saying like, yeah, I don't think Presti wants to get burned again. Like, I don't think this is going to be another Kevin Durant situation. If they get the sense that Paul George might leave, or at the very least won't commit to OKC, they're going to try to get a return for him, and with how he's playing and the lack of leverage they have, it's a really interesting situation, because so few teams are going to commit to Paul George and make a legitimate offer for him without a guarantee beyond the season, and the Cavs are one of the few teams that have the assets to, one, make that trade happen, and two, the desperation to make a legitimate offer without a guarantee.
Justin,
and
go ahead.
Okay, and it's still early. What do you mean? Obviously, when you think about it, like, there, how many I'm looking at right now? The Thunder have played 29 games, and you always, you know, with any team, when LeBron, he lost against the Knicks when he comes back to Cleveland, or I think back to when the Heat, when they had their first season together, when they lost to the Magic, I think they lost to someone early on. You're like, oh, they stink, they're not good. But, you know, after time, they become what they become, and they become great teams. I just don't see that with the Thunder. They just look so poor, and they lose weird games that you're just like, what? And it's like the Knicks game. The Knicks game's a great example. Like, that team shouldn't be losing still at this point. It shouldn't be playing the way they do. And you guys are much, much more tuned in with basketball sets. But I swear I saw something yesterday where three of them are like three of the worst shooters field goal percentage-wise in the NBA this year.
They're not shooting efficiently. I think they're all around 40%. I ran a mean poll yesterday asking whether people would rather have Jeff Green this season or Carmelo Anthony this season. And right now we're at 58% Jeff Green, 13% Carmelo Anthony, and 29% at Carter quit being a jerk. So
Jeff Green's a legend, man.
I like, for as much as I begged, and I don't know who it's not like I went and talked to Dan Gilbert, I begged Dwayne Wade for the Cavs because I wanted it so bad for many reasons. One, because I just wanted to see LeBron and Dwayne Wade together on the team I rooted for, but also because I thought it would work. I also did pin for Carmelo, and now, I mean, one looks great, one looks bad. Luckily, I got one of them, and it ended up working out so far. So
Melo would – I mean, my response to Carter's poll was, are we assuming their current situations, both playing with Westbrook, or would they be free? Because, like, I think Melo, like, on this Cavs team would be cooking, or at least playing better than he is in OKC.
I mean, I don't – that's a really interesting question. We were kind of discussing it at work last night about, like – if Melo had been with LeBron instead, like, would LeBron just be able to tamp down his bad habits like he does with everyone else, to the extent, like, is LeBron's force of personality so strong that he can make Melo not play like Melo? I don't know. like Melo is so entrenched as this kind of guy, and he's so confident in it that it's a really tough ask at this point. And they're in so much trouble with that because he still has his no trade clause, so they can't even dump him onto someone else. Yeah. And he's going to opt in. I don't know. I think you just have to bench him, move him to the bench, and like have him like try to play with the second unit and like start Patrick Patterson instead. Like, I mean, man, like I feel bad in a lot of ways because I think most of us thought, well, this was a good risk to take. No one really likes Enes Kanter as a guy in the postseason anyway. Doug McDermott is Doug McDermott. Why not? But like, if you could do it over again, you'd way rather have Kanter and McDermott.
Oh yeah.
Man, does Miami even have culture, or was that just LeBron being there? Because like Deion signed his contract, and now he's fat again. They're just falling apart. Like, this is hilarious. LeBron first took his talents to Miami and to South Beach, but then he took culture back to Cleveland.
Hell yeah.
I'll credit a little bit with Wade as well. I'm gushing over Wade just being on this team and what he's done, especially with that bench unit. Like, it just, there's something that we haven't seen. And again, you know, I'm not trying to compare, you know, like Iman Shumpert, you know, or any second unit guys last year with the Cavs to, you know, a world champion and an Olympic champion. But what Dwayne Wade has done in commanding the presence he has with that second unit, it's just so impressive. And then the fact that he accepted the bench role so quickly, or the second unit role, I can't say enough good things. And I, you know, it's unrealistic to think that he'll still be on this team next year, no matter what happens. Like, I'm not going to, you know, I just know the situation is going to get completely different, but it's, if they don't win this year, they don't win. But it's been awesome just to see him on that, you know, on the team and do what he's done, to see like another authority figure in basketball and then lead kind of just like a second team with the Cavs. It's like they have two teams really. And it's made it that much better to watch.
I was just thinking, as you said that, Jeff, about how, like, when's the last time, like, units that the Cavs had overperformed, that, like the parts that we expected to be good were always great, and that's why they've been so good the past 3 years. But, like, this year we've had all these different, like, really pleasant surprises, and I think you could call, you know, Delly a pleasant surprise and JR a pleasant surprise, but it's, like, the entire bench is a pleasant surprise this year. And, like, we have lineups that are working that, you know, you're just not used to seeing these non-LeBron lineups have any juice. And when they survived, it was more like the other team missed a couple shots they should have made, and Kyrie went nuts for a couple plays. Whereas, like, it just feels a lot more sustainable in the success in these second units. And it's really fun to watch.
I can't think of another time where we saw anyone. Like, the only time I can recall someone like outperforming expectation was like that brief weird Derek Williams thing, and even like that, it was like, okay, he's just getting transition dunks. It wasn't something like Jeff Green where you can see he's being maximized and actually playing really well. I don't know if Jeff Green has hit a three-pointer off the dribble this season. I know when I did a piece about him 2 weeks ago, he hadn't at that point, and I haven't seen him hit one since. But like lately, like he's taking the right shots, and like he's taking better and better shots as the season progresses. And rather than him falling apart, we're seeing just like, this is what people hope for when they saw Jeff Green. Like the story of his career has always been kind of wasted potential, and he's like, I really hate getting excited about it, but he's really playing how you would hope Jeff Green would play.
I'm ready to be excited about it. I'm not even ashamed of it anymore. Like, he's playing the way we want him to play, and that's the problem. Like, that's the long-running problem, is even when he's been successful in the past, it's been like those, you know, kind of like the games, like the outlier games, like he had against the Rockets where he scored like 20 and a quarter. Like, most of his success has not been high key success. It's been doing little smart things, defending pretty well on switches, working pretty hard on defense, running the floor in transition, things like we always knew he could do. So, I mean, I just, at this point, like, we've got a 30 game sample here, and I'm gonna buy it until it doesn't work anymore. It's not like he's shoot. It's not like anything he's doing is unsustainable.
Jeff, are you buttering Jeff Green?
I am buttering up to Jeff Green. Yeah, of course. But actually, I lend it a little bit to what you said about Derek Williams. And I will say, was there a quietly darker time than last year with the Cavs when it was the Derek Williams needs more minutes for the playoffs / Larry Sanders might be the savior time? That was a dark time looking back on it. But Derek Williams is – it's funny that you say Derek Williams, though, with – Jeff Green, because I feel like that's a lot of what we said about Derek Williams, but like, was he actually good? Like, he had the energy, he ran the floor and all that, but like, Jeff Green's doing it effectively, consistently, and not just in a way like, oh, we should see more of this. Like, he's doing it with a big sample size, and I think that's what's so exciting, is because what's the stigma the Cavs have had in the last cut? It's they're old, you know, they don't run as well, but Jeff Green has been a huge part of why that hasn't been the case for a team that going into the season, you're like, okay, they're old. You know, this is the AARP team. He has a different energy that, again, I like that you say Derek Williams because I haven't really made that connection. That's kind of what we were hoping we would get from Derek Williams if he played more, you know, if he had a more consistent, you know, amount of time and court presence.
We're really getting valuable contributions from Jeff Green and Jose Calderon. Like, this weird is, like, this year is so weird.
18 of 19 games the Cavaliers have won, and Jose Calderon has started every single of those games.
Well, now you're just lying because Shumpert started five of them.
He did start a couple of them. Point is, he's played in most of them, and it's crazy.
He was at the play against the Jazz in the last game before this Wizards one where he took it to the hoop as the shot clock expired with like a great move.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
I was like, are you shitting me? Like, what? Like, that's great. It's great to see, though. He's one of the more hated signings that I can remember with the Cavs.
Yeah, I was miserable about it. And so was, I mean, Justin wasn't as miserable, but I was not thrilled.
Yeah, it seems like the team loves him. The team absolutely loves Calderon. Yeah. And, like, I've heard that when he was in Toronto, too. Like, this guy is just someone that teammates have adored throughout his whole career.
It's that LeBron effect, you know. They just can't overstate it enough. I mean, that could be a big reason why. But hey, I mean, you know what? If it works, it works.
Yeah, and this might be getting too into the weeds, but I do like it when he's pulling a little more freely. Like, I think his natural instinct is to not be a high usage guy and to mostly move the ball, even if he has an okay angle. Like, but when he's playing aggressively on offense and
are you talking about Calderon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I prefer him to. I'd rather him shoot when he has openings because he's a good shooter. I'd rather him shoot when he has openings than to just kind of like reset the offense. Because there were a couple times earlier in the season where he's like kind of just out there, like when you get into a pickup game that you're underqualified to be in. So you're just like you're just moving the ball, you're just swinging it. All right, like I'll box out and just. But like he does have a skill or two that are still pretty effective, and I think he really the more aggressive he is, as long as it's you know not beyond reason, the better the Cavs play. Like when he's scoring like 7 to 9 points as opposed to like 2 to 4, like that help that kind of mindset I think helps that Cavs offense, especially on nights where Wade isn't playing
or playing well.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, Jeff, we don't want to keep you too long. We really do appreciate your time. Again, to our listeners, make sure you are checking out Lights, Camera, Podcast. As I said, it's one of my favorite podcasts. And the great thing about it is it's not as like time sensitive as like what we do here at the Chase Down. Like you can go back and revisit podcasts. Just the other day, I was listening to kind of the review of the summer movies and stuff like that. Like there's just so many things that you can dig through the archives and find some great content. And Jeff, you didn't even mention the sketches that Trill does.
They're amazing.
Trill Bowens is as funny as advertised on Twitter, especially. We record probably for 3.5-4 hours, and it comes out about like 1.5 to 2.5 hour podcast, depending. And we cut out so much stuff that it's not always it's inappropriate. It's just too much. It's too funny. You know, like a 15-minute fake Alex Jones rant from Trill Bowens about like Adam Sandler. It just sometimes doesn't fit, but it is – it's some of the funniest things I've ever heard. I can't overstate that enough. Both Ken Jack and Trill are funny, but yeah, Trill is he's pretty good. But I do appreciate the hype on the podcast. You guys are one of the few podcasts I listen to even at all because – well, I did just leave my full-time job. With a full-time job and editing the pod, it takes up a lot. But it's for you guys, I get my Cavs knowledge. And I follow both you guys on Twitter for a while now at this point. And so it's
I'm sorry.
It's cool to have this.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
No, we're all in that camp. So you don't have to apologize. We're all in that camp. I think all of that section of like Cavs Twitter is in that camp of you. I don't know why you're following us. Hey, that's if you go to my Twitter homepage, my pinned tweet is saying – you've made a huge mistake with Job from Arrested Development for why you followed me. So I'm in that camp as well.
Yeah, I just want to quickly echo Justin. This is a pod that I'm not even that big of a movie buff. Like, I like to go to the movies, but I'm not like a hardcore guy. And the pod has really moved up on my like it's like one of those like it's one of the first two or three pods I listen to whenever a new one comes up. I really enjoy it. I think it's hilarious. And like I was just DMing Jeff about this the other day. Like, I think one of the best compliments I can give it is like I just keep wanting to jump in the conversation while I listen to you guys talk. Like,
definitely.
I'm just thinking, I want to pause the conversation and jump in real quick. And I just think it's so good whether you guys are talking about Disney, whether you're talking about fast food places. I just love it, and I can't recommend it highly enough. Other than our own pod.
Thank you.
Right.
Of course.
Reminder, if you are passionate about podcasts, if there's any pods that you listen to, remember the best thing that you can do to support those podcasts is to leave a rating, review it, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe to cook the numbers. Like, that's the best way to go about it. And also with us, don't forget, you can go on draft.com. Support the show by using our promo code THECHASEDOWN. You get a free entry when you make your first deposit. Plus, you get a $100 money-back guarantee if you don't like your experience on draft. So, not to do another live read at the end of this, but remember, support the podcast you love. Most of us are basically doing it for free and giving up a lot of our time. So, support Jeff, support the pods you love, leave those ratings, reviews, subscribe, and check out the other shows on Leverage the Chat. My rotation is basically like all the Leverage the Chat pods, Lights, Camera, Podcast, and like the Levitard Show. Like, that's my daily routine. And as I said, leave those reviews.
I will say, not to infiltrate your read here, but I know sitting behind me as well at the Star Wars premiere was Amin Alassane, and he was the first person I talked to after the movie got out, Last Jedi, and we debriefed.
It was
incredibly intense.
I'm jealous of that. Amin would be a perfect person to talk about. So thanks again to all our
the best.
thanks again to all our listeners. Again, leave ratings, leave reviews, subscribe, and thanks for listening. And as always, go Cavs.
Go Cavs.